Welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Strahan.
Hey, it's Odie Strahan, and I'm having one of the most amazing days of my life. Hopefully you are too. Let's get this show started. What's going on? What's going on? Welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Strahan. Guys, we are in for a treat. Been waiting for this episode for some time. Really excited about today's guest. This young gentleman was a former Sheldon standout guard who went on to play college ball at all levels, which we'll definitely get into. We're gonna have some absolute straight talk today. Straight talk on many topics ranging from AAU, college hoops at each level, from junior college, D1, D2, and just much more. Like I said, lots to get into. Just want to bring him on. Elijah Dupuchon, are you out there, brother?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, man.
I had fun the first time, and I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, you know what? We're in about 25 other countries since then, so I'm looking forward to obviously the masses hearing you, man.
Global.
I love it. Yeah. Hey, we're international, baby. We're international.
Let's get it.
Hey, first of all, man, before we get into a lot, congrats on, your recent graduation from Cal State LA, man. Congrats on that.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. Speaking of that, we're actually going to roll into it. We're going to get right into it. We're going to actually start off with Cal State LA, Los Angeles. Talk to me about that experience while you were there. I know it was your last stop of your college, basketball journey. I do know COVID obviously had an impact on it, but talk to me about your time at Cal State.
Cal State LA, I feel like was a good, obviously I wish we would have done better as a team. However, I had fun just being in California again and just experiencing LA. I feel like college, a lot of kids, and just in general, like I feel like we're driven for basketball and to just do, to just be hooping. But I feel like a lot of people neglect like the outside part of basketball. Like, what are you doing outside of basketball? Like, you're still a human being outside of basketball. You still got to figure out who you are outside of basketball. And I feel like while being in LA, I got to see that and just experience another part of the world. But as far as basketball at Cal State LA, I feel like it was a lot of ups and downs. Honestly, I was hurt. I played well part of the year, and then obviously we just did bad. But as a team, nothing. I feel like everything that I went through that year, I feel like it just made me stronger as a man and just as a basketball player.
Gotcha. We gotcha. I remember talking to you during the season, and you were telling me, how your team was just stacked with talent, like literally D1 talent across the board. What do you think? I mean, let's just have some straight talk throughout this whole episode, man.
No worries.
What do you think was the determining factors on why you guys weren't able to take it where you guys should have been able to take it to?
Well, like you just said, we had 71 bounce backs. We had a kid who was at DePaul. He was at DePaul and Northridge. We had another kid who was at Northridge. He was a walk-on, but he had Division I offers after leaving Northridge as a walk-on. We had a kid who was a walk-on at Arizona State. Could flat out shoot the ball. Definitely, in my opinion, he was a Division I player, even though he was a walk-on at ASU. And then we had a big from HBU, Houston Baptist, 6'8". He was a bounce back. I think he had 26 career high against Georgia Tech. And then we had another kid from Dartmouth. He went to Dartmouth and NAU. And he was averaging about 12 points at Dartmouth as a freshman before some weird stuff started happening. And then I believe myself, I think that's about 6 or 7. So, and then we had a kid who was a bounce back from UC Davis. I literally make a joke about it, but I literally feel like he can bite the rim. He has that much. He has that much bounce, and it's crazy. But that's Wes Harris, and then myself. But with all the talent that we had, I remember the very first open gym that we had as a team. And I remember going back with my roommate, who was a D1 bounce back. And I was like, bro, we are not going to lose. Like, there's no way. I was like, I've been at a D2 before. I've even been at a D1. And I feel like our talent level that we have on this team could be, I wouldn't say like a high major, but we could be like a, I feel like we could have been like easily a low major, like Big Sky, Big West. We had that type of talent to where we could have went well, depending on who our coach was. And no disrespect to Coach Sai, but I feel like due to how free he played and the ego that these coaches have and how close-minded they are and not trying to play to the strengths of your players, that he just had a vision on what he wanted his team to look like. And he boxed us in that, and essentially it kind of tore our team apart with it just tore our team apart, honestly. Like, the kid from DePaul, he literally started games at DePaul and was getting DMPs for us. The kid who could bite the rim, like, he starts one game and then the next game doesn't play at all. Or there's games where we start four freshmen or three freshmen, and we have guys who've been in college for 3-4 years who are on the bench getting 5 to 10 minutes. And he was just playing mind games with players, and then people get in their head, and just our offense was really stagnant. And there was just a lot going on to where it was like, to be honest, it just came down to coaching. It had nothing to do with talent. It was just complete, just bad coaching. And you see that a lot at the college level, where your team is talented or you have talented players that aren't playing to the best of their abilities because a coach either has them on a leash or the coach doesn't know how to play to their players' strengths.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of coaches out there that are known for obviously implementing great systems, and they recruit based on players that will fit that system, right? And which is totally fine. But in this case, when you have that many players that played at such a high level, you would think you would have not just a great team, but a dominant team. Like, I mean, here you are thinking you weren't going to lose a game.
Yeah, no, literally, like, it's crazy because I remember me and my roommate, we were like, okay, after a few open gyms, we're like, let's watch who won the Division II championship. Let's see what they look like. Let's see how they play the game. And I specifically remember, like, bro, we have the talent that matches this. But immediately after the first week of practice, I knew it was going to be a long year just because of the types of things that we were implementing and the types of drills that we were working on. I was just like, it's sad, like, when, like, seeing some of the things that you do in college. I mean, obviously, I've been on a winning program at the Division I level. Obviously, I was a winning program in high school and JUCO, but there's a difference. You could just see the difference in what coaches were teaching and the defensive principles they taught. And then for the teams that were losing, the lack of detail that these coaches implemented and that they demanded from the players. And literally the smallest details matter so much. And if you're constantly neglecting those in each and every practice, it goes a long way. And it comes down to literally a couple possessions. In college, like, you screw up a couple possessions each game, you're just going to continually lose.
Yeah, that's tough. Like I said, in there's a lot of things within that. I mean, you know, we're going to keep it moving here, but I mean, when it comes to when you have that type of effect, or players see that, like yourself, obviously you went through you know, many programs, you got to see, you know, got coached by some great coaches, and you were able to identify that. It actually kills the culture. It kills the trust that you have, trust that you have as a player. And when you guys don't have that trust, it's kind of hard to move forward and really, you know, have a successful season at that point.
I agree 1,000%.
Yeah. Let's like I said, I always, you know, I told you this before we started here, is my favorite definition of success is to find someone that has what you want and have them show you how they did it. And the reason why I was so excited to, mm-hmm. you know, get you back on the podcast and, you know, around the busy schedule is because I feel like out of all the stories out there, you know, I've been in El Grove area for some time. I mean,
for sure.
Everybody knows. Well, if you don't know, obviously you were a standout at Sheldon High School. I think, in my opinion, you are the top guard I've seen 6 feet and under since I've been out here. I mean, in person, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And not to take away from you as an overall basketball player, but as to me, you're 6'3", 6'2", it's a wrap. Come on. I mean, it was already a wrap as it is. But that being said, I like the fact that you were able to your journey, you touched at every level. So, I mean, literally, if anything, yeah, so you always got to consider the source. And to me, you're like the best source that I can have on here. So yep. not only to tell your story, but so other players, coaches, and parents could hear this, because this is mm-hmm. actually we're dropping gems here. This is I'm feeding to you guys, and I mean coming and obviously it's your story and you lived it firsthand. Yep. So let's get into the high school hoops and AAU ball. So yep. you're able to experience high level with both at Sheldon and then playing on the circuit, including EYBL. Talk yes. to me about each of them and how they differed for you. You know, when it comes to playing that high level high school ball and then EYBL, which I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I might be wrong on this, but you played the likes, I believe, did you play Trey?
Trey Young. At some
point? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Trey Young, Michael Porter. Yeah, I played people like that.
Talk to me about those experiences, those two specifically. Except I'm going to go a little deeper in this, but at start, just initially, the level at the high, obviously, Sheldon played in the Tarkanian Classics, level. And then that obviously playing against the likes of Michael Porter Jr. And sure. Trey. Talk to me about those.
Well, obviously I was on, I played varsity at Sheldon for 4 years. And we've always played. Coach Joey, he always prided himself on never ducking any smoke. Like wherever the best tournament was, the best teams were, we were going to that. We were getting clapped my freshman year in some of these tournaments that we were going to, because Coach Joey was like, I don't care how young my team is. Like, I'm going to put them against the biggest dogs, no matter who it is. And obviously it helped me grow as a player, but I never seen as much growth until I went into the EYBL. I feel like that was just a whole nother level. And I feel like a lot of people who dominate the EYBL are most likely going to be in the league, or they're going to be at a high major. So like, if you're able to dominate and figure out the EYBL, then you're able to dominate and figure out any level of basketball, because I forgot what the statistic was, but I think one of my soldiers coaches was telling us about it, but I don't want to say like 70%, but very high percentage of players in the EYBL that are on draft boards, not only in the league, but just on the draft board, because you could get in the league, whether it's through the G League or whatever. But the EYBL, a lot of the kids were getting on draft boards. So, like I was saying, is the EYBL, it was just head and shoulders above high school basketball. And if you're not, at least for me, I was like, if you're not dominating high school, how can you expect to dominate any other level? Like, because Sacramento is such a small city. Obviously, we have a lot of talent in Sacramento, but there's so many other large cities with a lot more talent. So it's like, if you really see yourself as going to the next level or being a really good basketball player, you have to be able to dominate your city, or you're not going to be able to dominate at a college or be a starter at a college when they're getting the best players from each city.
Hey, that makes perfect sense. I know, obviously, when you went to the EYBL, you got to, face the talents, the MPJ, obviously Trey, probably a plethora of other ones that, we're just not naming. Let me ask you this, though. Between high school ball, because there's a difference here, between high school ball and AAU, which one do you feel, though, developed your game more? Because a lot of times we hear the AAU is bad, for basketball, or, it doesn't necessarily develop mm-hmm. players, which there's some truth to that. But let me ask you, you personally, where do you feel your game developed the most, through high school or AAU?
I feel like, if you want me to be honest, 100%, I feel like it was developed more through training.
Okay, yeah.
I feel like when I was young, I used to train with Ron Nelson, and we had a lot of people come through he would call it Top Gun Academy. And in Top Gun, there was no such thing as fouls. Obviously, you're not going to be fouling on purpose. But Coach Ron would always preach toughness and playing through contact. And we'd have this it's called the L drill. And that's the drill that would literally, people would come one day and never come back again, because they were just too soft. And we had too many dogs in there that were just grimy. And if you weren't a dog, Coach Ron was going to put you against somebody who's literally going to eat you alive. And I feel like that's really what helped me become, like, gave me that dog mentality. And I just took that into high school. And a lot of people, I wouldn't say a lot, but there was a few players like Devin Green and Drew Cobb was also, he was a part of Top Gun Academy. Like, we would, we brought that same energy into practice every day. in high school. So obviously going against really good guards every day in practice, I feel like that also helped me grow as a player. But honestly, if I'm being, I can't compare anything to the UIBL. I feel like it just opens your mind and shows you how good other players are. And then it just puts that much fire under you and makes you just want to work that much harder. So I feel like for me, nothing compared to just playing on the UIBL, and just because of how fast the game was, how athletic the players were. When I came back to Sacramento, I remember literally, I think I played against Capital or something. I had like 30 in like three quarters. And I was just like, this is crazy how easy this is. Mm. Because I just came from playing on the circuit, and it was like cakewalk. It was just like I said, it was just so effortless for me.
No, that all makes perfect sense. Training, we're gonna get back to, and you're right. I mean, I know Coach Nelson has had a lot of people through that program. I know. I mean, he's two names that he's really attached to as of late. I mean, I guess his Varick. Latest protege, Varick and Marcellus. You know, those are the two that. It's funny because my son, who's now 15, went to him for a few sessions when he was 8 or 9. And the part that That's I found, funny. You know, here's the funny part. This is the funny part is that he was in there with the likes of Varick and, you know, Marcellus and who else was in there. But the part that I found interesting, and I mean, it is what it is, obviously, you know, what mm-hmm. works for him has worked for him. He didn't have a separate, like, a workout or a separate curriculum for my son, who was 8 or 9 at the time, and then the teenagers, and then we even had some high schoolers in there. It was the same, mm-hmm. Which you could have your different takes on it, but for me, I was like, well, I mean, I can't 8 or 9. This kid is 17, 16, but it was you're right.
And you're making him go against them.
Yeah, no, and a full court 1-on-1 game. You know that at the end of the game, you know that went full court and some dogs. You know, and guess what? And they beat him up like they're supposed to. Because if not, Nelson was going to talk about him. You know, and even when he got a few buckets in, you let an 8-year-old get a bucket on you. He was talking.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Exactly. There you go. So, yeah. So I can. But I'm glad you said that though about the training, because we're going to circle back at the very end. We're going to talk about training. So let's. So you have obviously a great high school career. If you guys aren't aware, I guess you could still look at Max Preps, look at the stats, look at what Sheldon did during his time. At the end of your high school career, you end up going to Yuba Junior College. Now, now, what were some of the schools that now we all know that obviously Yuba wasn't your first choice. Now,
It wasn't. It for sure wasn't. Honestly, I looked down on going JUCO, but honestly, looking back, at like where I was mentally as a senior, I feel like everything I went through was God humbling me, if I'm being completely honest.
No, I love it. That's what I want to hear. So I want to hear, and I want you to finish this, is what were some of those schools that schools offered you? Yeah, go ahead.
So, like I said, I'm going to be 100% honest with everybody, since not too many people but my circle know. But I was on a visit my senior year to Dartmouth did not like the area. It was in New Hampshire, me and my dad. And it like we were just getting like get out vibes, and it just something wasn't sitting right with my spirit. And honestly, like, I don't know if it was just because of the weather or however it was, maybe it was just a super culture shock. But the second day of the visit, it sounds very bad, but like, we were just like, you know, like, we don't want to waste their time and we don't want to waste our time. And we were like, basically, we were just like, oh, we essentially made up an excuse so that we can leave the second day. And we ended up just visiting Boston and just walking around there just because it was like 2 hours away. And instead of going to the second day of the visit, we essentially, and me being humble now, we big timed the school and we were like, this isn't going to work for us. And I went off and just enjoyed this Boston. So that was a school that was really interested, and I'm pretty sure they were going to offer me. I'm almost 1,000% positive they're going to offer me. But when you big time a school like that, obviously you're not going to get an offer, and I should at least took the offer. And not accepted and like signed or anything like that, but at least just have that under my belt. And then I had Eastern Washington. They wanted me on an official visit. I mean, I'm sorry, not Eastern Washington, Eastern Kentucky in the OVC. They wanted me to come on an official visit after my senior year. And I didn't even take the visit just because I was like, I don't want to be in Kentucky. I want to have a scholarship in California where my family could see me play. And I was really stuck on that. UCSB was supposed to offer me. A lot of things happened where they didn't offer me. They were just I don't know, like, it was a lot to where, like, they were supposed to offer me. It didn't happen. And long story short, I was like, you know what? Like, I seen Jaren Starr went to Yuba. Coach Korn reached out to me, I believe. And I was just like, you know what? A lot of kids go to college, Division I level, and they play as a freshman. I mean, they don't play as a freshman. I was like, you know what? Let me go JUCO, get a school that actually really wants me, hopefully in California. And then I'll be bigger, stronger, and I'll go right into a program and play right away. Because why would a school recruit out of a JUCO for a kid not to play? So that was my mindset going to Yuba.
And you did phenomenal there. Obviously, you had a, you know, a great year. I believe you finished All-State, right?
Of course.
All-State. That highlight film is actually, to me, still one of the dopest out there. I believe Marcus put that together for you.
Yeah,
right?
Shout out to Marcus
for putting that together for you. Let me ask you this: the transition to JUCO. Once again, people have different thoughts, and we're gonna get into this when it comes to the transfer portal, which might be gonna be a route that more people go than expected. But let me ask you this: how was that transition from a competition standpoint, though?
Honestly, I was ready. Like, In my opinion, I was ready to go to the Division I level. However, like I said, I feel like everything I've been going through in general, it was God humbling me. And I'm glad I went through it. And I'll tell you about where my mindset was as I went into Cal State LA and just how God has just changed my mindset completely. But sorry, what was your question? I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Competition standpoint,
the competition
seamless.
It was pretty seamless, to be honest with you. Like I said, I felt like I was ready for D1, and like going into JUCO, I was already working really hard, and Coach Korn was like, just put on 10 pounds. I need you. I think I was 160 as a senior. He's like, I need you to be 170 when you get here. It's going to be a little bit harder and people are a little bit stronger. And just when I got there, like, it was a little culture shock, a little bit, not going to lie, because Coach Joey was more free and Coach Korn was like, it was more system based, but the system was built around the point guard, in my opinion, especially since I was such a dominant guard, and a lot of guards do well in his system in general. But like, for me, it was hard getting used to in the beginning, and me and Korn bumped heads a little bit, and we had a few talks, and then that really just helped me really excel as a point guard. And I feel like he really helped me just get better and just get wiser and just become a better point guard in general.
Yeah. And you, like I said, you had, you know, obviously great numbers, great success, you know, while you're with him, which obviously didn't shock anybody, especially at the level that you were playing at prior. Let me ask you this about the JUCO route. With the transfer portal playing such a big factor, even more, you know, players going that route. How do you feel about the JUCO route now for players?
I still like it, honestly, because if you're not really like that as a player and really you're really serious about hoop and you're in the weight room and you're really strong, like, most freshmen and sophomores, I mean, like I said, it just depends on the player. They typically don't play too much at the four-year level, whether that's D1 or D2. It just depends on, like I said, how mature they are, their game, how mature their game is, and how strong they are. So, like, if you're, like, more frail and you're not really – you need some weight and you just need the court experience, I think it's better to go the JUCO route, because you're going to get that court experience. You're going to get playing time. And you're just going to just grow in it and mature versus just going straight into the 4-year. Now, if you don't mind going the hard route and winning the coaches over and learning the system, then obviously in a school is interested in you, then obviously take the 4-year route. But I wouldn't look down on the JUCO route at all.
Gotcha. Let's talk about the transfer portal. I know it's something I talked about with Drew when he was on recently. Transfer portal. What are your thoughts on it? Do you feel that it's more positive or negative? Because obviously this is a whole lot different than it was when you coming in as a freshman.
For sure.
So here, I had Drew define it, and I think he did a phenomenal job. I want you to define it for the people out there that don't, like, what the heck is this transfer portal that he keeps on talking about? Yeah, obviously, you being a player, explain the transfer portal to everybody, and then from there, let me know what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I've been in there a couple times, so I know a little yes, something sir. About it. But essentially, the transfer portal is when you go to a school and you're signed to this school, and let's say for whatever reason things didn't work out, you tell the school, hey, I want to enter the transfer portal and explore my other options, and other schools are able to offer you and essentially sign you to become in their program.
Gotcha. And then give me your thoughts on it. Obviously you were in it a couple times yourself. Feel it's more positive or negative, you know?
So honestly, I feel like I love the new rule that they did where kids don't have to sit out a year every time they transfer. I feel like that was a positive for college basketball in general. So I think that is definitely a positive, just because there's certain things kids go through, whether that's there's mental issues, whether that's you're far from home, and there's certain things that you just didn't know you would have went through as a young adult. And it's like, you know what, I want to try to explore something that can make me more happy or help me out mentally. Cause when your mind is gone, your peace is gone and everything is gone. So it's like, you can't really get too mad at kids for wanting to transfer, in my opinion. But there's also the other side where it's like, that's part of life and you need to fight through it and you need to figure it out. So there's both sides of it, but I like it. I mean, I wouldn't be a fan of it if I was coming out of high school, just because if I'm a college, I'm going to get a kid out the transfer portal versus a kid who's probably not as mature from high school, just depending on where his game stands. But I think I don't find anything wrong with it. I think it's a positive thing. Just because schools lie, certain times you're just not in a good fit and you just have to do what's best for you at the end of the day. But like I said, if I was in high school, I don't know if I would be a huge fan of it. I think that it's a good thing for basketball.
That's what I want to get into. So unless you're, and even if you're a 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, even for those guys, but if you're not one of those guys and just say you're a top player locally in your area, you know, you're putting up numbers, you're putting up buckets, you're doing what you got to do. You take your team far in the playoffs, whatever it may be, but you're not necessarily, you know, that guy, right?
Yeah.
To me, and like I said, and don't take it from the guy that, you know, has been out forever. I want to hear it from you. Is
for sure.
I do like the fact they're not penalizing kids, because, like you said, these schools sometimes there's false promises. Let's be honest, and they're stuck.
For sure.
They're held hostage. They have to sit out a year. It just changes so many things. So I like that part about it. But like right now, as you know, I have a son that's going to be going to his sophomore year. You know, I'm, you know, still involved with obviously the locally here with the high school basketball. But for a lot of these kids, they're not just competing against their class. They're not even competing against not even their class locally or even nationwide. Like, yeah. For example, when Drew was on, we're talking about like when Devin transferred, you know, former 5-star, ask you, right?
Yep.
You're going against him. You're not necessarily going against. So I would think, I hate to say it, but it probably took a hit for these high school kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's your thoughts?
For most high school kids, it definitely takes a super hit, just because it's like, again, why would I come get this high school kid who, like I said, isn't a top player. He's like a 2-3 star maybe, when I can go get a 4-star who's most likely going to transfer down, or a 5-star who's going to transfer down into a better situation to where he could be the guy. And he's older and he experienced a high major school or a mid major or whatever the case may be. But again, he's experienced college in another college program, so he knows what to expect, versus a kid who has no idea what college basketball is.
Hey, quick break here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we'll get right back to it. When it comes to your CBD, quality matters. For all natural relief, visit SimpleGardenCBD.com. If 2020 taught us anything, it's how important our mental and physical health is. Simple Garden CBD specializes in third-party, lab-tested, premium-quality CBD products that deliver consistent potency and purity you can count on. Utilizing industry-best extracting methods and ingredients, Simple Garden CBD is proof that not all CBD is created equal. Go check out their amazing lineup of premium CBD vapes, great-tasting full-spectrum, and THC-free tincture oils, as well as their delicious Delta 8 gummies that are absolutely amazing. Amazing. And don't forget, they also carry some of the latest vape battery technology and designs on the market. So shop now at SimpleGardenCBD.com and use discount code STRAYHAND15 and save 15% on your order. That's right, I said it. Save 15% on your order using discount code STRAYHAND15. Get your order in now and experience the amazing benefits of premium quality CBD for yourself. Add Simple Garden CBD to your health and wellness regimen today. Real CBD, real results.
So here's the thing. You have a younger brother. I'm not sure what, I know you have a few, but the one that's playing at, what grade is he in?
He's about to be a senior.
So you have senior year, right? So so obviously I've seen him, you know, his game grow and mature. So someone like him, right, who's obviously he's had a journey of his own, right? So
of course,
for him, like, what do you tell someone like your brother here, you know, who you love?
Yeah,
I'm giving him. And by the way, I hate the word being realistic. Like in my household, I'd rather have you cuss at me than use the word realistic. Honestly, I don't like that. I don't like that word.
I hear you.
But no. But at the same time. We have to be realistic, right? You
have to be a dreamer too. Like I used to be that big realistic guy, but I'm also the more mature I've gotten, I feel like if you don't believe in yourself, then like you can't expect anybody else to believe in you. And me, like if I was a parent, I wouldn't want to put doubt in my son or my daughter's mind. I would want to let them know like you can do anything as long as you're working, you put God first, and then anything could happen from there.
So 1,000,000%.
I'm big on not putting doubt into kids' minds, just because once they doubt, then you pretty much lost the battle. They lost the battle. Whatever they're trying to accomplish, they already lost because their mind is already thinking in a negative place. But from a reality standpoint, I do agree with, like, go ahead on with your question. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, so for someone like him, you know, if he asks you, hey, you know, what should be my goal, or do you think I could get a D1 offer? What would your answer be for him?
I would be completely honest with him. I'm also a person who is 100% with people. And for my brother, if I'm being honest, I don't think he's ready for the D1 level right now. I think that I call it part-time hooper. I feel like there's times where he's a part-time hooper, and I know what it takes to be it. And a lot of these kids are not to just pick on my little brother, because I talk to Coach Joey all the time. And I see, and he's like, these kids are nowhere near as serious as you are. I just wish they had that hunger and that dog that you have. And he's like, these kids, like, they just don't get it. And I don't know if it's just generation in general, but a lot of these kids, like I said, are part-time hoopers, to where you have to really dedicate. I mean, when you're in high school, there's not much you're doing. Like, if you're not trying to start a business or something, you're a hooper, like, your whole life should be dedicated around basketball, whether that's running, whether that's lifting, whether that's hooping. Like, you should be doing at least 2 workouts a day minimum, a weight workout and a weight / conditioning and on the court, 2 workouts a day. If you're not doing that, you're a part-time hooper. You're not really hooping. And
you know, that is strong. You know what, too? You're describing some people that might have made, you know, all area, all, you know, all conference, whatever it may be, right?
For sure.
They're still part-time hoopers. I don't care what numbers you put up.
Yeah, they're part-time hoopers. And when you get to the next level, you'll see a full-time see a full-time hooper.
I like it, man. No, hey, listen, sometimes, you know, there's power in words, man. So hopefully people are letting this digest and they're really, you know, receiving it, you know, not just hearing, they're receiving it, what you're saying. Let me ask you,
but I'm gonna just add on to what I was saying, but with the reality thing. But my biggest thing is I just tell people, hey, maybe right now you're not ready, but that doesn't mean you can't be ready. If you put in the work and you're constantly working for this specific goal and you continue to believe in yourself, it could happen at some point. But at this very moment, I just don't think you're ready. I'll just say something like that.
No, and you know what? That's straight talk. I mean, that's all I could give people. That's all you want to do is give people false hope that they're ready. Then they go out there, and as you said, as a part-time hooper, go out there with a full-timer, right, who eat, breathes, sleeps basketball and gets killed. I mean, that's
no, literally.
That's just pretty much it. Let me ask you this, because I got a lot more stuff I want to get into. Is, so you were able to compete at both the D1 level, and then you obviously finished out at, you know, Cal State, but also Hilo is D2, right? Or is that D2?
Yeah.
The D2 as well? D2. Okay. So let me ask you this. What is the biggest difference between the two, both on and off the court?
Well, off the court, obviously Division I has more money, so you're just taken care of better. There's better facilities. They just treat you better, obviously, just because they have more money than a Division II. Obviously, I didn't go to the biggest D2s, and I wish I would have went to a better D2, if I'm being honest. Honestly, going from Omaha to D2, I was just like, oh, D2 is D2. Like, it's all the same. And I was rudely mistaken. Like, I had no idea that there was actually, like, D2s that are a lot better. And I wish, like I said, I wish I would have taken a different route. when I transferred down to D2. But yeah.
What about on the court?
Oh, okay. On the court. So on the court, the biggest difference that I seen was the bigs. I feel like depending on what conference you're in and what teams you're playing, I feel like a lot of the guards were similar. Not everybody's, honestly, Division I is better than Division II. Like, I feel like I was in the CCA this year, and according to the rankings this year, we had 3 teams in the top 10 in the country in our conference. And no offense to those teams, but I felt like it was just like a little bit more sharpened JUCO.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no disrespect, but it was just like, it wasn't, D2 basketball isn't that good in my opinion. It isn't like, I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it wasn't like head and shoulders above JUCO in my opinion. And maybe that's because I wasn't on the greatest team and we didn't go very far. So I didn't get to see like some of the really, really good teams. Maybe that's part of the reason why, I don't know. But the biggest difference between D2 and D1, in my opinion, would probably be the bigs. People who are at fours at, like I said, we had a lot of D1 bounce backs, and we had one of my roommate, he played the 4 at Dartmouth, but at our school, he was a 5. So I feel like just the size difference was the biggest thing. And just, there's just a lot more people who are a lot more athletic, not necessarily super skilled, but Division I, they love athletes. So yep, I would say there'd just be just a lot more, a lot of the people are a lot more athletic, a lot more rim protectors. That's about it, in my opinion.
All right, let me ask you this then. What's one thing that most players, you know, they have this image, or, you know, they have this thought of what D1, you know, is, right? What's one thing that you, let's say this. What's one thing that was surprising to you about playing at the D1 level?
For me, because I think I'm a really good basketball player, I didn't think division, I feel like because of the lack of Division I, like I said, I had pretty much like around 3 or 4 schools that were really interested in me, maybe 5 schools that were interested in me at the Division I level. And because the lack of how many schools were interested in me, I was like, maybe I'm not good enough for the Division I level. And then when I got there, I'm just like, there's no way. Some of these kids have offers, and they were just like, it was just hard for them to see that I could play at this level. Like, it was just hard for me to wrap my mind around it. Like, dang, I thought it would be a lot harder or a lot better than what I've seen, because the lack of recruiting that I was receiving from that level, I just felt like maybe I wasn't good enough.
Gotcha. Well, and you know, the fact that you had played against so many, you know, obviously elite players
for sure
beforehand, you know, should have been at that point, but I get it. You know, confidence is one thing that is so critical, but when you lose it though, it's kind of hard. You can't just snap and get it back. You know, it's one of those, I'm not sure to say you lost confidence, but when even a little bit of doubt gets in there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That, I mean, at the end of the day, you could think like, hey, I'm a Division I player. And I know without a doubt, I'm a Division I player. And I would tell people that all the time. And I truly believe that, but I'm like, man, Maybe these coaches is right. Like, why am I not getting these offers? I'm just confused as to why. Like, are they really that nice? And then I remember the specific reason why I went to Omaha was because on my visit, I was hooping with like one of the leading scorer. I think he was averaging like 17, and like some other players. I was like, man, I'm cooking right now. Like, if I come here, it's about to be curtains for these guys. Like, it's about to be good. It's about to be the green light. And even that's what the coaches were telling me after the workout. They're like, man, we need you here. We're about to build a team around you, this and that. So I'm like, okay, it's about to be Yuba and Sheldon all over again. Just because of how the workout went and just how everything went and how what they were talking about. I was like, okay, this is going to be a good fit. And then obviously politics comes and plays a role. And then coaches just got to say what they got to say to get you there. And then part of it was, if I'm looking back on being honest with myself, I feel like I wasn't coachable in the sense that I wasn't trying to do what the coaches wanted. I wasn't trying to accept the role that the coaches wanted me. I came here thinking I was going to be the guy. And then when I got there, they're like, well, we have a senior who averaged 17 points last year. He's our guy. So I wasn't willing to accept a role that they didn't tell me I was going to have, because again, they told me I was going to be something else.
That's the sales game of this whole college recruiting thing, though. Let's just be honest, right?
Yeah,
you tell, tell them what you want to hear to get them to commit, and then you get there, it's a different story. That's that, once again, that's the to bounce back on the transfer portal. That's the good part, because now they don't have the leverage to having you have to sit out of here, right?
It's sad because I remember being at Omaha and I'm like, man, they told me all this and that. And I'm like, I didn't want to accept the role just because I was like, you guys told me something else. And I feel like if I accept this role, I'm not being a dog. And yeah. I just felt like, in a way, I felt like I was enslaved. Like, literally, it's like, I'm already signed here. I can't do nothing about it. They could talk to me how they want to talk to me. They can bench me. They could do whatever they want to me because I'm signed and I can't do nothing about it.
That's deep, bro.
That's just literally what it feels like.
Wow. No, I mean, listen, I mean, you're just giving straight talking. You're giving what hopefully doesn't happen, but what there's possibly about, you know, that could happen out there when you obviously are promised everything. And especially when it comes to systems, you've always got to find, you and I always talk about this. Yep. It's probably just as important to find the system to fit you more than anything else.
Yeah, you could go to a smaller school. As long as the system fits you, I feel like that's bigger than going to a big school and the system doesn't fit you. Just because there's people who aren't as good, but because the system is really good for them, they look better. And there's people who are really good, but the system isn't built for them and they look cheeks.
That's true. I mean, that's straight talk, man.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What contributed to your decision on finishing out at a D2 rather than pursuing like another D1 school to play for?
I'm glad you came back to this, but like I told you before about like with God humbling me, I just remember how after Omaha, I was like, you know what, I'm going D1. I know I could play at this level. I was like, honestly, I feel like I could kill at this level if I'm being honest. And I was like trying to find a Division 1 school, and nobody really wanted me because obviously I had no stats to go off of. They didn't see anything. I wasn't a high recruit. I didn't have a number of offers coming out of high school. So it was like, why would we offer this kid? He had his Division 1 chance and he didn't do anything there. So why would we offer him? So then I was like, let me humble myself. Let me try to get a walk-on spot somewhere and earn a scholarship somewhere and just thug it out. I couldn't even get a walk-on spot to San Jose State. I couldn't get a walk-on spot to Fullerton. I couldn't get a walk-on spot anywhere. And I'm just like, this is crazy. I was like, maybe God is trying to humble me and tell me to go Division 2. So I didn't want to go the D2 route, but I was like, forget it. Let's just go D2. My brother had an offer. We both had an offer. I was like, let's just go to Hawaii. I'll be in Hawaii. I'll enjoy just being in Hawaii. I didn't care. The team wasn't good. I was like, let me at least just enjoy Hawaii. Let me let basketball take me somewhere where I can enjoy life. And didn't even go on a visit just because it was just advice my dad gave me. I wish I didn't take that advice. But I feel like if I would have went on a visit, I would have never committed there. But it is what it is. So I was there. It wasn't a good fit. And I ended up transferring again. And I was just – and I remember being in the portal and, like, schools were just like, well, we don't know if you're going to play right away. It's your second transfer. And I wasn't getting no love. Also, it was COVID. And so that made it even that much more difficult. I reached out to Cal State LA. I was reaching out to all schools in California in general. And Coach Corner is reaching out to schools for me. I remember Stanislaw didn't want me. There's a number of schools that I definitely could have played at that just didn't want me because they were like, maybe this kid's a problem. This is second transfer. And they just didn't want me. So I'm reaching out to, I've literally emailed Cal State LA a couple of times. And I've emailed multiple schools in California multiple times. But I specifically remember, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to go to Cal State LA. So I emailed one coach. Didn't get a response. Emailed another coach, didn't get a response. Emailed another coach, didn't get a response. So I'm like, dang, why am I not getting responses? I was like, I can't even get a response. And then I DM'd one of the Coach Mason on Twitter, and he finally responded to me, and he got back to me, and they were extremely interested. The coach said, I was like, I'd never seen your emails. They got drowned out because of COVID. And I just remember I was praying to God. I was like, Lord, I was like, I don't know where I'm going to be next year. I just know, Lord, I just need one more shot. I was like, I just give me another shot anywhere. I was getting stuff out of state. I had a few out of state things, but I was like, Lord, just give me something in California, please, so I could just be home. And if anything goes bad, I could at least go home. And I remember finally Cal State LA was like, we don't care what we have to do. we'll fight for you to get your year back and this and that. I mean, get you to play right away. We'll do whatever we need to do to get you there. And I was like, man, this is where God wants me to be. The coach has a relationship with Christ. And I was like, you know what? Let me just go to this school and finish my last year out. But bringing it back to how God humbled me, I just remember being in a place where I was like, God, I just want a scholarship in California. And please give me that, versus where I was in high school, where I was like, I need a Division I. I don't care. It needs to be in California, and I just need a Division I. And if it's a D2, I'm not talking to you. And if it's a D1 that I don't like, I'm probably not talking to you either.
Wow.
So I was just so – I wasn't humble enough. And, yeah, I was good, but it was like because I wasn't humble, I feel like God had to bring me to a place and humble me and let me know, like, you can't be doing this to schools. Like, you don't understand how good you have it. You got schools who actually want to give you a scholarship offer right out of high school. Yeah, it's not exactly where you want to be, but it's where I'm calling you to be, and you're denying it.
I love the fact that you're able to be cognizant and recognize that about yourself, you know, that you're able see the maturation and the full circle. And honestly, at the end of the day, I'm glad that you allowed the Lord to humble you, because that's something that for not sure. Everybody does, you know. And like I said, the plan was always written out for you. You know, I mean, we all know that. Sure. And like I said, we just talked about this also before we started recording, is that, you know, the first time you were on the pod, I said, you know, you're going to be a professional basketball player. There's no doubt about that. I said it with conviction and certainty. And, you know, like I told you, I listened to that episode before we got to recording. And you know, we'll close out with that later on, talking about your first professional offer. But the route wasn't the one that you expected, but it was the one that was designed for you, one way or another. Sure. Yeah, and there's 100%. Always lessons. There's always lessons at each stop. It's going to make you the better person, the better man. Because at the end of the day, guess what? The basketball does stop. I know they say ball is life, but guess what? The ball does stop. And guess what?
Yep.
Everything that you went through, even though you probably saw it as a hoop journey, it was really a life journey. It was really a life journey. Yeah, that's what it was. And it's what's going to make you a better person, you know, better husband, better brother, better son. Overall.
It gave me resilience.
That's it. Yeah, resilience. Yeah. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. No, I love that, man. That was great that you shared that. Let me ask you this. We're gonna finish up with some quick hitters, but I really want to get your take on, I definitely want to end out with that, you know, talk about your first, you know, professional opportunity, the first to play professionally. But let me ask you this, because you did mention earlier that you were one of the few players that's been on my podcast amongst all the great players I've had, man. Very few have actually played every year at the varsity level. Okay. In fact, funny, I had Josh Williams, you know, on.
Yeah.
And you know, he had it pay his dues. He was talking about how his leash got longer and longer as, you know, each year got on. But at first he had to get busy or he was gonna get pulled out. That's just how it works, right? So let me ask you this. That being said, I want to get your take. And this is coming from someone that did play, you know, every year at varsity. What's your take on, let's say, someone getting more burn at the JV level, as opposed to even freshman, sophomore at the JV level, as opposed to just being on varsity, but maybe getting 5 to 7 minutes? What's your take
I think it goes to fit, like on JV, is that fit going to help you grow as a player?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it going to hinder your growth? Like some JV coaches aren't fit for what you have planned for your kid.
That's good. Like that's good.
This coach might actually make your kids take steps backwards because they're playing JV, versus the varsity coach might be, he's not playing, but he's practicing against these players who are going to prepare him for the following year and get him better. Because there's a few kids who have taken that route. I think X and Marquise, X and Marquise, instead of playing with Coach Rob, no disrespect to Coach Rob, but instead of playing with Coach Rob, they decided to play with me, Drew, I mean, Coach Joey, me, Drew, Isaiah, like all the seniors, and we would beat them up purposefully and let them know, like, you guys will thank us later, bro. We're going to beat you down every single day. And I'm pretty sure they really appreciated that. And I don't think them playing on JV would have compared to them playing against me, my brother, Drew, and LJ every single day. There's no
way. I like that. So in your book, it's not necessarily court time, it's really, you know, how you're gonna be using that time to develop is what it
for
sounds
sure
like.
for sure. It definitely, court time definitely matters, because I would be going against what I said earlier with the JUCO thing. Court time matters 1,000%. Don't get me wrong. However, it just depends on the fit. Like we said, fit is big, the biggest thing more than anything. If you have a bad fit on JV, but you're getting burned, like, I don't know if that's more important than, yeah, I'm not playing too much on varsity, but the following year, I'm probably going to be playing a lot, and I'm developing, and I'm learning this coach's system, and he's starting to like me, even though he knows, like, I'm not going to play. Coach Joey liked X. Coach Joey liked Marquise. He knew he wasn't going to play him as freshman, but he knew these kids are going to be a vital part of my program in the next few years. So let me get them ready.
Man, but X was a problem from the jump, even when he came in just for defensive purposes. And I mean, he was
for sure.
He was just a dog. For sure. I remember he was causing. I mean, his plus minus must have been through the roof, bro. Honestly, when he came in, his plus minus had to be through the roof, because I remember when he came in. Go ahead.
For sure. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going. You said,
yeah,
you,
but
ahead.
let me tell you this. He was not like that in the beginning. Like I said, it happened through me, Drew, Isaiah, LJ being in his ass. And teaching him certain things. If I'm being honest with you, X, that boy couldn't remember a play to save his life. We would run through the play. X, you're going to start here, and you're going to run straight to the corner. Right when we go, he wouldn't know where to go. I'm like, bro, we just told you to just run to the corner, bro. Why are you running to the top of the key?
I love it.
We molded him. I don't want to take all the credit. Obviously, he worked his ass off. But at the end of the day, like, without us being in his ass and leading him and helping him become better, he wouldn't have been able to help us.
Cool. Let me know that's very good, because, you know, I know it's different for every kid, you know, it's different for every system, but it's always good to hear from someone like yourself that did not only play, you know, every year at the varsity level, but you were able to see obviously the younger guys that, you know, may have, like I said, Jay Will didn't go all 4 years at the varsity level, and obviously he turned out to be a damn good player. He was NorCal player of the year, and obviously, it's a different fit, but I wanted to get your take on it. Let me ask you this. Training, you brought this up earlier, and I know there's one individual, but I'll see if you bring him up, that you gave a lot of credit to. I know when you and I have talked in the past, but I know you've had an opportunity, and we're not knocking any trainers, because, you know, I have a good relationship, and I know you do too, with all the top trainers here in SAC, you know, because I think all of them are great. I genuinely do. This ain't no gas. I genuinely think they're all great, and exactly. But let me ask you this. You know, what do you feel specifically should a player look for when it comes to a trainer? And also the second part of this question is, do you feel players should train more than play games? Meaning that, you know, they play all these AAU games, but should they be training more? Especially the fact that you, because I didn't know this, but especially since you accredited the training aspect more than anything else. So if you could give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I feel, like I said, I feel like training is a huge part of just my development in general. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have my brother, so even when I didn't have a training, I could play against him. So training is definitely important. I hate how these trainers have so much. I don't know. I feel like they have, there's underlying hate between a lot of the trainers, but I've trained with pretty much everyone in Sacramento, it seems like, over the years. And the biggest thing when I look at now that I'm just more mature and I just know what I want in my game, I feel like how their training translates. Let's not do things that don't translate to the next level, because that's not going to get me better. And then also, do they have players that are going to push me? I feel like if I was just training just one-on-one, like, with training one-on-one is definitely good, don't get me wrong, but playing against like other talented individuals who are going to push you and make you work and get you better, I think that is another huge thing. Without me really years and years of battling against Devin Green, like, I don't think I would have been the player I am today. Or battling against like people at Shelton, like, I don't think I'd have been, or even battling against like Tyrell or Noah or Jordan, like at Shine's workouts, like, those are the things that push you and help you become better, because obviously they might be better at certain things than I am, and I might be better than them at certain things. And it's like, iron sharpens iron. Like, you know, the verse in the Bible. So
I do.
I feel like, yeah, when you have a sharp sword and I'm a sharp sword, and we can just continue to sharpen each other's swords and just make each other that much better. So I feel like you want to definitely find a good trainer that their training translates to the next level, but you also want to make sure that they have really good individuals like around your age or maybe even older that can push you and help you become the player that you need to be.
Man, that is solid, bro. And I honestly I didn't even think about that. I know that sounds simple to some, but I didn't even think about that, especially, you know, like you said, the one-on-one sessions is what you think of with training. But when you're battling against someone that's also one of the top players, like you said, even maybe older, I mean, that can only make you better. Essentially, if you're your trainer's best player, that's kind of tough, you know,
for sure at
that point. It's just like running a business and you're the smartest guy. You shouldn't be the smartest guy in your business. Let's just be perfectly honest, right? You got to be around better people.
Yeah, people who are better in other aspects of the game. And it's funny because bringing up, you were just talking about how just playing against older kids. Issa, Shine used to have Issa in there. He was a little scrawny little kid. And he'd be going against like me and like Noah and Ty and like Marcellus Howard and like just a lot of these people who are obviously a lot stronger and older than him. And just like, again, we're stronger than him. So we're going to bully him, push him all the way to half court. But like that helped. I feel like that helped him grow into being like a really good basketball player, just because obviously, I mean, we were way stronger than him. And Shine had him before he had me, and he was probably going against Jordan for years and Noah for years. So it's like, you're only going to get better. There's no way you don't get better.
Yeah, and you know what? Last time I checked, Issa turned out to be a pretty decent player, right?
Yeah,
he's only at Stanford, you know, possibly going to be a starter. No big deal. No big deal.
Hey, quick break here. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we'll get right back to it. Are you sick and tired of that heart-sinking feeling every time you get your electricity bill? Do you wish there was some way to join in the revolution of solar power without leaving your wallet begging for mercy? Luckily for you, there's a way to achieve both. At Sunray Solar, we're here to use our unrivaled expertise and high-quality equipment to deliver beyond your expectations. We pride ourselves on keeping up to date with the latest global innovations, guaranteeing long-lasting performance, reliability, and seamless integration with your home. Solar energy just doesn't save the planet, it saves you from that heart-sinking feeling of increasing utility rates year to year. So what are you waiting for? Start putting your money back in your pocket today. Reach out to Daniel today and find out how to cut your electricity bill in half. Mention Straight Talk with Strahan and receive a $500 cash rebate. Call Daniel with Sunray Solar at 872-238-9319 or email him at daniel@sunrays.solar or message him on IG at SolarDan1. Power your home with the sun's rays today.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. All the twists and turns that you've had on your journey, let me ask you, I mean, this is, it's kind of a deeper question, but because I want these kids to hear this. I want just people in general to hear this, but with all the twists and turns that you've had on your journey, how are you able to mentally keep going? Because obviously we're here, we do this, we're doing this podcast.
That's a great question.
We know the end all. I mean, like right now, I'm about to ask you in a few minutes here, how the first offer came about to play professionally, right? But here's the thing. I feel there's so much talent that is left because they just don't stay the course. And it's not weakness by their part, because let's be honest, life is tough. So for someone like you, you had high aspirations. And for the record, I feel you fulfilled it, because guess what? You're going to be a professional basketball player. You're going to get paid to play the game of basketball. Not too many people can do that. But that being said, you've come with a lot of hype, a lot of expectations.
Sure. Yeah.
So how were you able to deal with some of those adversity and roadblocks, man? Because it wasn't smooth. Let's just be perfect. There's a lot of stuff that this was straight talk, but there was still a lot of stuff we left off, because we'd be here for 24 hours if we told your whole story. But that being said, how are you able to mentally keep going?
I'm not going to lie. It was hard. I remember specifically being at Omaha, and I remember like after being – getting a few DMPs, and I'm just like, man, I should be playing. Like, these guys are not that good. And even I remember some of my teammates were like, bro, like, obviously I don't want you to take my minutes, but I ain't gonna lie, you should be playing, bro. And these are guards that are playing in front of me. And like, it was hard to hear that, especially when I worked my ass off. I know how hard I work, and just like, it was really difficult. I remember calling my dad, like, man, I was like, I want to come back home. I was like, I can't do this no more. I was like, I just feel like I'm selling my soul for basketball.
And I was like, I'm just mentally a wreck. I'm like, and it was just really hard. I was like, if this is what being on scholarship and playing basketball at Division I level is like, I don't want it. I remember specifically saying that. I was like, I don't want it. And it's hard to keep going, but I just feel like with a lot of prayer, I feel like I just feel like, honestly, it was God 100%. Just, I mean, even there's times, even right now, like it's been difficult for me. I've been dealing with an injury just on and off, and it's been hard to just stay motivated. But I feel like it's part of life. Like, it's not always, life isn't always going to be just really easy and positive. And it's easy to stay motivated. I'm sure you've been through times where you lack motivation. But I honestly give it all to God. I'm just like, I feel like he's just I feel like I'm really goal oriented. And I feel like whenever I could see something or I have a certain goal in mind, I just feel like I'm just wired like that, to where it's like, I'm not going to stop until I get that goal. And no matter how hard it gets, I'm going to just figure it out. And if roadblocks come, I'm going to just try to figure it out. Maybe I might do it the wrong way a couple of times, but eventually I'm going to figure it out at some point. And I feel like I've just because of everything I've been through, I'm using that in life. Even if like I go overseas, doesn't work out, I'm like, you know what, God, I don't think this is what you want for me. I feel like everything that I've been going through my whole life in this basketball journey, maybe this isn't what you want for me. And then I'll figure what is next for me. I feel like just everything that I've been through, like, I'm always just going to figure it out. So to answer your question, honestly, I feel like it was just God. Honestly, I feel like he's always, whenever I'm weak, he's strong, and he just helps me just keep pushing no matter what happens. And again, I'm very goal oriented. So whenever I have a goal, I just seek and until I get it and work until I get it.
I really respect that about you. And like I said, even when we weren't in contact, and, you know, obviously I'm friends with, you know, a few of your family members, I was able to, you know, obviously see you from afar. I really respected it because I know how tough it is. So I definitely, so here's the level I always try to tell people, especially from a business athlete, it, you know, all perspect, you know, different facets, is that I really respect individuals like yourself, you know, young man that's going through all these different, you know, changes, different movements, unexpected for movements, sure. Right? Because yeah. Here's the thing. So it's very generic, but everybody says, you know, what's your why? And so for me, you know, I had my son, you know, relatively young. So I always had a why for me, even if I wanted to quit, even if I like I'm done, like I want to quit. I can't quit because I have, can't. You know, I literally cannot quit.
Can't.
It's dead. Quit. I've probably never said that word so many times. Exactly. It's non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable. So, and that's really where my work ethic came from, is when it comes to, it was Isaiah. Now I actually have three kids, you know, that are relying on me, and not only relying on me, you know, to take care of, they need me, but also I'm their walking testimony on what's possible. And if I stop, they're going to think that's a possibility. It could just stop, and it just can't happen. Yep. But for someone like yourself that doesn't have kids, obviously it's young, and I always really admire that about you guys, because life is tough, and you, and don't get me wrong, as much as you matured, and obviously you come a long way, and the Lord has definitely took you from, you know, definitely A to Z, right? Or I mean, not sure. All the Z, but has grown you. You still have so much to grow, and you're still young, you know. So I love that. I love that fact that that you were able to stay, you know, stay motivated, stay inspired, because it's tough, man. I mean, it's really tough especially when we say it. The testimony is always easier to share once you're through it. You know, when you're going through it, not the easiest. So when you're
at all,
it's fun to share. Right now, it's fun to share. Wasn't fun during the time, right?
Not at all.
So I love to hear that. I definitely love. Let me ask you this. Did doubt ever take over?
I wouldn't say it took over, but there was times there would be seasons of doubt, maybe weeks or even a month, where I was just like completely doubt, just a lot of doubt. But I feel like for the most part, I feel like during COVID, I ain't gonna lie, I think I stopped hooping for about like 2 to 3 months straight.
Wow.
Just didn't hoop. I was like, you know, I don't want to hoop right now. I'm going to just make some money. And then I was just like, you know what? Now it's time to go. It's go time. Like, I had my break. I got my mind clear. I made some money. I realized this is not what I want to do with my whole life. I was like, you know what? Let me get back to work. Let me get right one time. But
No, I love it, man. I want to ask you one last thing, man. We're gonna, you know, we're conclude Like I said, because I know, like I said, we could keep you out. I'll keep you on here. You know, we could rap all day. But I honestly feel like this episode had so many gems dropped in it, man. Honestly, I think it's going to be like one of those. It's like one of those, like, you know, your favorite sitcom or whatever it may be, how you watch the episode over and over. They're going to have to go back and play this over and over. I really, mm-hmm. I really, really, really encourage all the players, parents, coaches, that's listening to this, share this with everybody and anybody, especially the ones that need to hear this. Cause I mean, you can look them up. Elijah Dubuchon, hey, men lie, women lie, numbers don't, right? Facts don't.
For
I mean,
sure.
Yeah, look at his journey. I mean, he's living proof and he's experienced it, you know, at every level. So I always like a happy ending, man. I am. I'm a sucker for a happy ending, right?
And love it. This isn't
the ending, but I like the success stories. Let's talk to me about how this first professional opportunity came about. I know you haven't officially accepted. I mean, in fact, I asked you permission to even talk about it. Yeah. I didn't know if you're at liberty to talk about it. But talk to me about that even the offer came about.
Really, I just remember. I remember I was at a crossroad where I could possibly go back to college for 1 year, and or figure it out after that. And I just remember just being, honestly, I actually started the process of going back for another year. And part of my heart wasn't in it. I was like, you know what? Like, I was just like, this year didn't really go. It didn't really go too well. I was like, I really don't like college basketball, if I'm being honest. Like, it's really a headache, if I'm being honest. And I was just like, I want to go back, but I really don't. And I was like, you know what? I'm old, and but you can't come back to this. So like, I was like, you know, let me just go back for the experience. And I just remember one day an agent reached out to me, and I was like, this has to be God. I was like, I'm not even trying to get reached out by, I'm not even putting myself out there like that. And for an agent to reach out to me, I just feel like maybe this is what God wants me to do. So I was talking to him, and he was just like, yeah, it really doesn't make sense for you to go back to college. Like, unless you guys win the national title or you're like player of the year or something like that, which obviously can only happen if I win. And, I have all the confidence in myself. I don't know if I have that same confidence in my coach. So I was like, you know what? Like, it doesn't make sense for me to go back if I'm not going to get paid anymore overseas than if I left right now. I have my degree. So what's the whole point of going back? So then a couple weeks, months go by, and I'm just like, I don't know if I want to sign with this specific agent. I was looking at a few other options, whether I wanted to play in Puerto Rico or elsewhere, just because I have a Puerto Rican background. And I was trying to find a Puerto Rican agent. However, I have something working with that right now, but their season doesn't start till March. And from August to March, I need to be doing something. So I'm like, you know what, let me just sign with this guy since he's already reached out to me. Let me just go with somebody who actually believes in me versus me trying to go find somebody to make them believe in me. So I decided to sign with this agent. And then he's from Croatia with Clutch Sports Agency. And the day I signed, I think he already had an offer for me. He was like, I already have an offer for you. He was like, I know we talked about it. I know you've been waiting, just trying to figure things out. But he's like, I already have an offer for you in Azerbaijan. It's right next to Iran and Turkey area and right on the water. And really nice city. And I haven't accepted the offer just because I felt like they're rushing the situation. I don't really know too much about overseas because it's my first time going through it. But I don't know if they're just like, they want people to sign fast. This is literally my first time. I need to talk to a lot more people. But for me, I remember rushing into my situation at Omaha where they put a timeline on when I needed a decision. And I remember my gut telling me not to sign with them. But just because I fell for the bells and whistles, the really nice arena, extremely nice arena, the very nice facilities, like I ignored that over like other like North Dakota or Detroit that also offered me. And I was just like, you know what, I'm not gonna make that same mistake where I feel pressured and I feel like I can't pray about it and really make a wise decision. So I haven't accepted it yet, but I know God will provide, and I know I'll get another offer. But yeah, I have one offer for overseas as of right now.
Hey, man, praise God. Listen, at the end of the day, for you to even have the opportunity to, you know, to accept that, be a professional basketball player, I completely get it. NBA is the goal. you know, for the most part, people growing up, but people don't understand. At the end of the day, if you're getting paid to play a kid's game, number one, play a game that you obviously love, play a game that you love, you're obviously still young. I mean, think about it. Play a game that you love till you're, I mean, if you're blessed enough to high 30s, mid 30s, high 30s,
sure.
You know, maybe, I don't know, near 40, I don't know. I mean, obviously LeBron's an anomaly, but that's just one, a big exception, of course.
Of course. I'm saying,
but at the end of the day, you know, have some financial literacy, put what you made during that time in the right places, and yep. you can really set yourself up to have a good life,
to
you know,
be good. Not,
yep. to be good, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that's a blessing in itself. That's the goal. So once again, this 100%. Is another success story. This is another success story. And better yet, listen, man, I don't know about others, but shoot, I would sit down and listen to your testimony. You never know. You could be out there speaking to people about this testimony. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm fortunate enough, you know, just for a cool factor, not mm-hmm. flexing or anything like that, but you know, yeah. Now this podcast, humbled to say it's in 27 countries. How cool is that, right? It's in Ukraine, that's in Ukraine, subscribers dope. Now. But think about that. So this podcast, your story is going to be out there to 27 countries. Don't tell me there's not going to be at least one person impacted motivated. By this story.
Yeah.
Motivated, inspired, you know.
Inspired, yeah.
The light bulb turned on. Stuff's making sense. Someone probably got knocked down and thought it was the end of the world. And here's this story, you know. Probably going to be looking you up, to be honest with you, right? Let's go for back sure. and look at let's fact check some of this stuff this young fella yeah. said, right? It's for all sure. there. It's all straight talk. You've been, it's been, yep. you've been beyond transparent as possible, man.
Of course.
And like I said, that in itself, it's just, I mean, like I said, I'm excited for you, bro. I'm excited for you. I'm excited.
Appreciate
you know, obviously, I'm excited. I'm proud of the journey that you've had. And I'm actually, like I said, I'm just even more ecstatic about to see what you're going to turn into when it comes to what's to become, man. So, man, I appreciate you, man. Like I said, this was, I enjoy all my episodes. I don't want to get killed by anybody out there, but I'm going to say off the rip, man, this was actually one of my favorite episodes, man. Cause I really felt that you didn't leave nothing behind, man. I think you really
not
put it
all.
Out there for people, man. But, let me ask you this one last thing. We're going to conclude, man. I asked
all
you this
good.
Last time, but guess what? Life has, you know, a year and a half has, you know, obviously throwing you more lessons. You've grown a lot. So here we go. Let me ask you this. Just a more advice, man. I know it's very generic. I ask my guests this a lot at the end, but no more advice you have someone for out there. Right now, someone out there, you know, they could be, you know, they just had a great monster year or maybe they're struggling. What's the number one advice you have for aspiring basketball players out there, man? Being that you went through everything.
My biggest advice and what I've learned over the many transfers and just everything that I've been through is just the power of adapting. I feel like the quicker you adapt to your situation and your circumstances, the better you can excel and continue to move forward. I feel like there's times where I didn't adapt as quick and I feel like it hurt me in a way, but I feel like the older I've gotten and the more I started to recognize certain situations, like this is pretty similar to what I've been through. Let me adapt to this so that I can excel and I could do well. And I feel like that goes for anything, whether that's a job, whether that's just moving to a new city, whether that's a new team that you might play on. The quicker you adapt to your environment, the quicker you can excel and do well in whatever you're dealing with.
That's strong, bro. Honestly, that's strong. Just like this whole episode, I'm telling you, man. Thank you once again for being on, bro. I appreciate
of course.
You. I look forward to obviously the, you know, the official announcement on whatever the next move is. You know, wherever the Lord,
of course.
You know, obviously leads you. But like mm-hmm. I said, I definitely want to, you know, I definitely want to just thank you again for, you know, for the time today.
It's all love, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad that I got the opportunity to be out here and just tell people my story. And hopefully, like you said, like it inspires somebody and they can learn from my mistakes and God doesn't have to humble them like they humbled me.
No, it's irrefutable that this is going to impact, you know, the masses. I'm trying to tell you that right now. And yes, I'm biased, but you know what? I know what I hear and I know the truth, man. Trust me. This is going to be something that's going to be good, you know, for people to hear. It's probably going to change a lot of people's trajectory where they're at right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I pray it does.
Yeah, I do too, brother. I really do. So guys, listen, thank you guys for joining me for, man, just a phenomenal episode. Thank you for joining me for another Straight Talk with Strahan. Continue having a blessed day, guys. God bless. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in to another Straight Talk with Strahan podcast. And if you haven't done so already, click the subscribe button and make sure to follow him on Instagram at Strahan, Strayhand. And we will catch you on the next episode.